Good afternoon and welcome to a Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are here until the hour of six as always. Thank you very much, Loise, for holding it up at that side, and we'll take it from here until the hour of six as always. And we always have an exciting topic. And today's one is about tourism. You know, something that has been tested and proven, and there's a unanimous consensus around the fact that we are very good at it.
Namibia, you must feel impressed, you must feel proud, specifically those of you working in the tourism sector, that the UNWTO actually considers us to be a model template.
Yeah.
Now, I say this because Helmut and I, we did emphasize who actually said that. That was Mr. Zubaskashvili, the former. Yeah, I got his name this time correct, Helmut. Zubaskashvili, yeah. He's Georgian, don't worry. He was the previous head when he was here just before independence, just before President Nandi Ndaitwah's inauguration. He was literally before that day, that 21 March.
wait, 21 March.
That period, he was at a specific sustainable tourism engagement that was held at NUST.
Yeah.
And he launched this particular document, Helmut, at the same time, when he was obviously there participating. So, Namibians, we are technically a template for the world in terms of how a country must nurture, look after, develop, position policies in accordance with the particular sector. And we just, you know, coddle it all the way to whatever level of prosperity. That's the setting that we're going to work from.
The tourism part of it is, and I think we have had several discussions around the subject of tourism. And one is the one that, you know, was based on a local report that was produced. Was that report the one from the Minister of Mines and Energy, where they were sort of like, you know, trying to find an excuse around, breaking up the tourism sector.
It was actually environment.
Environment and tourism?
It was their policy document that was just co-authored by the guys from Mines and Energy. But in the executive, in the summary, like I explained, it sounds like us mining.
Okay, you see, that's the reason why, how do I put this? Anyone that have listened to the, I'm not sure if you have listened to the song of, who is this, Rihanna and Justin Timberlake, Rehab. It says featuring Rihanna featuring, Justin Timberlake, and all Justin Timberlake had to do there was saying, Gavide, like twice, the whole song. That was the kind of featuring that was going on in that.
I will not ask you to repeat what you just said.
The whole song, all he had to do, that's all he did. I don't even know why why he had his name on that song.
Yeah.
Bro didn't sing anything. And I think it's also the same thing you get if you start, doing a song featuring DJ Khaled. Just come yell with the best and then leave everything up to you.
It's usually affiliated to DJ Khaled putting the beats, or DJ Khaled's voice goes like DJ Khaled, or it was the other guy's name, Timbaland. He does the same thing also. He has a distinct beat. That he produced.
Yeah.
And then he always says featuring Timbaland at the start. I'm like,
that's all. Bye bye.
Look at these guys. Trying to ensure that, we feature.
We were here. Yeah, so that report was, now in that report, the Ministry of Environment and Tourism is the one that comes and, put in the beats and say, we're the best, and then leave everything to the Minister of Mines and Energy.
Why does this sound like backup singers and all?
Those guys are so hunting us after this. The whole report.
They got new leadership. Today, there's a whole shakeup of executive directors going on. So I think they might first have to cool down, Yeah, go continue driving in your drive time session, guys. Don't worry. Listen to us more.
Yeah, just focus on the road.
Yeah,
focus on the road.
Don't laugh. We know we're saying serious stuff here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's basically how I look at that report. But anyway, enough of those guys. They have a lot of internal things to sort of like reshuffling going on then. So when we look at tourism, one thing that we have established in is universally established is that tourism is a sector that is infinite.
Yes.
Yeah. In comparison to the extractive ones, we have a lot of South America. Mm. The coastline on the side of the Americas. Mm. They have a lot, especially near Mexico. They have a lot of abandoned oil rigs, and a lot of them are labeled as under rehabilitation. But that's just using technical lingo. Those things, after the oil have been drilled out, a lot of companies don't want to carry out the final rehabilitation process. So they just label it as we are going to do it. Mm. But that's just on paper, but in actual reality, they've already abandoned that thing and moved on because it costs millions, if not billions, to basically decommission and dismantle the whole thing because this is a floating platform.
Yeah.
So it's just like having a whole yard, floating on the sea. But one thing that's been established when it comes to tourism is that the resources in tourism are finite. There are people that will always want to come and see Dune 7 even after 1,000 years, after we're all gone. It's not like you can bomb out Dune 7. It will always be there. So, do you have a business plan in mind?
1,000 years from now. That's pretty far.
Well, for how long have now? Let's talk about. Let me give you the reason why I went took it that far.
Yeah.
Let's look at some of the historical sites, for example.
Mm.
The pyramids have been standing for as long as any one of us have been alive, and they are still.
No, they've not been alive 40 years. How
much? Oh no,
they've been there as long as we humanity have been there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that.
Thanks. And now, first of all, one thing to basically point out is that, for one, you want to know how old they are. We don't even know how old they are. We can estimate.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can estimate.
If we know who the owner of the pyramid is, the person buried there.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Those are the sites that will continue to be a significant part of the tourism of whatever empire that is going to set up shop there.
Mm.
We know that it was not always, those are the borders of Egypt that we have today. Those have not always been the borders of Egypt. A lot of borders are going to shift with time.
Yeah.
And speaking as Africans, we can already see that we have a lot of borders that are drawn and a lot of them keep shifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before we continue, the subject is tourism and we are the perfect example and we have a commercial break.
Do you want to stand a chance of winning a 500 Namibian dollar ShopRite USave gift voucher? Then simply tell us, what makes ShopRite USave different from all the other stores? Send your answers on WhatsApp to 081-200-4144. That's 081-200-4144. You save. I save. We all save at USave.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. The time is 4:46. Before we continue, let's take a live read. This is a ShopRite live read. Get the hottest deals on all your spirit needs this winter at your favorite ShopRite liquor shop. Get your get 400 milligrams triple wood blended Scotch whiskey for just $200. Scottish Collie whiskey at $174.99 each. And $154.99 each for Smirnoff 1818 vodka and Rock Bay spiced rum. And Gordon's gin for only $169.99 each. ShopRite Liquor Shop. Hot deals at a low price. Alcoholic drinks not for under 18. Welcome back. So we continue with the subject of tourism. And the main subject we are going to use today is from the United Nations World Tourism Report. And, you know, one thing that's fascinating about tourism, I think it's one of, if not the only, source of revenue that all countries have in common. You have, there's something weird about, it's about, there's all headphones about to blast off my ears now. So if you look at, a bunch of natural resources, for example, the resource that you find in Angola may not be available in Namibia, but the resource that you find in terms of natural extractive resources that you find in Namibia may not be available in Zambia, and stuff. But, we all have tourist sites.
We all have something different to offer.
We all have something different to offer in terms of sightseeing, historical sites. Okay, now it sounds perfecto, on my end. We have historical sites and reserves in terms of natural sites and historical sites and all these places. So that's, I think, would be something that is worth is something that we should basically take priority. Not like the way that the report we just kapanad earlier, when we started, that sort of like try to lean more into the direction of, well, if the income projection of the discovered resources outweighs the income coming from tourism, then we might consider digging the whole stuff up.
Oh. We might.
Okay, and when it's out? What do we do?
There's another we might. Because, for example, there were people, let me not say people were excited, but it seemed like, if you had to ask many Namibians who Dangote was when he, visited here, was it last month? And the particular engagement, that he had at State House in terms of meeting the president, and then indicating to the president, he's impressed with Namibia, he likes it, which is something you and I already, we did it with the review of the IBS report at the start of this year. And also last year, we also looked at the IBS report last year. And the unique unique dimension from that was, Namibia is a country known for investing in infrastructure. So Namibia tries to get the one thing right, meaning the one thing that you first need in any scenario. Because if you look at a picture like this, Helmut, imagine if your tourist sector was that most of your urban centers just had gravel roads. There was just one tar road running through the urban center, but all the secondary roads off from there were
muddy, gravel.
They were always in dilapidated standards. And what many people don't believe or know is that a gravel road is actually more dangerous also than a wet road, or a road that was soaked in water, a tar road soaked in water.
Mm-hmm.
Reason being, Helmut, because the tire manufacturers manufacture these everyday tires for you on a tar road.
Yeah.
They don't manufacture a everyday tire meant for a tar road for a gravel road. They manufacture a completely different tire for that function.
Now, if wait, what?
Yeah. It's a tire that has a bigger tread. It has bigger spaces between the tread. And if you see a tire that has a narrower tread with a lot more, you know, those grooves on it, that tire is meant for everyday tar road functions. And in the event that the tar road is wet, it helps to disperse the water to the sides so that it's not tar road, water, and your tire.
And then your tire. Then yeah. It becomes slippery.
Yeah. And then you become a flotation device instead of just being, you know, a regular functioning car. Those particular indications are one about, you know, what then does it tell a tourist when they come to a country like that, where they encounter just gravel roads everywhere, and that, let's say the tourist wanted to see something nice. Now, we all know that us in Africa, we are the continent where the tourists are coming for, they just think about us as safari.
Yeah.
They just come to see wild animals.
In their natural habitats.
In their natural habitats. That's don't know if it's us or the animal, the actual animals, but, you know, that's the explainer that's usually given. I know. I know.
This is not our natural habitat.
But, you know, you get the understanding, because it seems like more that the natural resources tend to attract the tourist with the money. Because the tourist doesn't seem to be interested in anything that's happening in your city.
I think about everyone travels every time that every time someone travels somewhere, they're looking for something exotic, something that they don't already have at home. Otherwise, then what's the point of traveling? There's one Chinese girl that made a very funny video on TikTok about every time that she travels and she tries to buy something that is specific, something that's culturally made like in a shape of what, of what's in that country.
Mm.
She more often look at in the very same way that you'd come to Namibia, for example, and try to get some portraits and stuff.
Yeah.
That's traditionally made. More often she made a point that more often when she traveled to different countries, it's kind of difficult to buy something that doesn't have a made in China label.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult. It's super difficult.
It's super difficult because, well, they make a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so every time that someone travels, obviously we're looking for something that we have not seen before. So if every country had a Hoba meteorite, why would I want to go to Grootfontein and see one?
Exactly.
I already have one in my town.
Exactly.
So every time that we travel, we usually are looking for something, we are looking for something unique. So I think, especially when it comes to people, if I have not seen Namibian life before, and I think different people travel for different for different reasons. The people that travel looking for nightlife, those people are most likely going to be in urban areas.
Yes.
Yeah. But those ones that just wanna explore nature, most of them, urban areas are just transit areas. They're just going to do their shopping and then do all the necessary paperwork if they have any left, and then they're in their four wheel drive off to the villages. And the good thing about the tourism industry in Namibia is that we have an impressive number tourist sites that are designed to simulate the natural living environment. This is
a natural heritage.
There's a specific name for it that I keep forgetting. And the thing is, in other words, Okay.
Is it contained within a conservation area or within a game park or in a national park?
They are more often. Okay, I've seen one in Tsumkwe, but is that in a game area? I'm not sure about the boundaries of that thing.
Mm.
Where you just where tourists go to sort of like look at the people that live in that, the people that are native to that area, especially the Shung, especially the Shungwasi.
Mm.
You know, their traditional way of living.
Chukwan.
Chu. I'm not even going to try that. I have. I've tried, believe me. Yeah, so. Yeah.
You know, I was hoping to be serious this today, almost. But yeah, no, you are right. Oh, you're talking about the living museum.
Yes, thank you. Okay. That's the term I was looking for. Yeah, the living museums.
Yeah.
Because, well, every time, you know, it's kind of difficult to see someone's tradition when they're urbanized. Because the more urbanized we are, especially for those of us that have, a very high Western influence, the more Western we become. Pasta dominates our kitchens.
Mm.
But, before pasta, what were you eating? If you're in anthropology, documenting, traditional life in Namibia, for example, it would be very difficult to do in an urban area.
Mm.
You'll have to go to living museums, for example, where they sort of like try to imitate the traditional living, lifestyle of the said group of people where the living museum is set up.
Mm.
So, coming to see an urban area, this is someone who is coming from a better urban area than the one that's in your country. Why would they want to hang around?
It's a subjective scenario about which cities or urban areas are better.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, for example, say that in Namibia's case. Because if you go, for example, to a place like Cape Town, fellow African, much of the tourists there, they don't come to Cape Town for the wine farms around.
What do they come for?
They come literally for the city, the urban life. The urban engagement. And you are right on that. Because they come to South Africa, or they come to the cities in South Africa, and they go see one city. It's like those Namibians. Have you ever heard of those that they go to the UK, they say, I'm going to the UK, and then they just go to London.
That's all they saw. Two around London, and there are buses that can take you around.
Yeah, that's all they saw. They just saw London. Or you've got those other Namibians that go to Germany, and then they just stopped in Frankfurt.
And that's it.
That's it. They didn't even go to Berlin. They didn't even fly to Berlin. No, they just stopped in Frankfurt, and that's it. Or those others that go to, okay, if those that used to go to the US, because now.
It's fortified.
Yeah, completely. Even with a $250 US dollar, visa fee, which is $5,000. I mean, we asked them $1,006 or $1,007.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's now $5,000. So, those that could still go to the US, what they now have to, what they went and did, they only go see New York. They just go see New York, and then some of them even would come back, Hamud. I'm sorry, fellow Namibians, but I really had such an argument with a fellow Namibian.
Hmm.
Come back, and they come and tell me, New York is the capital of the US. You're like, huh? What? Are you sure? New York is the capital of the US? Because last time I checked, it's Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
There's a reason why it sits in a neutral territory so that no other state can claim ownership or superiority over the other states in the US.
Yeah.
So, that particular indicator is some of those peculiar things. Now, here's a funny thing, Amut. Every African country has something different.
New York, capital city. Jesus, okay. African country.
every African country has something unique to offer.
Yeah.
If people tell you, what idea do you get about Tanzania if someone mentions the name Tanzania?
Oh, Serengeti.
No, that is in Kenya, brah.
Mm. Serengeti is Tanzania.
Brah.
Mm.
Brah. Okay, we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there. I know that Tanzania and Kenya share, what's the mountain's name?
Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, they share Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
But if you think about, Tanzania, or someone mentions Tanzania, in some cases, those that are in the know would think about Zanzibar.
Yeah.
Which is just, in that small Muslim principality just across from the capital, Dar es Salaam.
Yeah.
Zanzibar was that small island there.
Yeah.
Because that is the sort of like paradise,
Bahama type of tourist setting,
you know? Yeah. Anyone, if I mention Seychelles and Mauritius to you, Helmut, you would firstly go like, eish, rich people's playgrounds. Because, yes, even though some Namibians can afford to go to Seychelles and Mauritius,
Mauritius.
The two islands, it's Seychelles, Mauritius, and there's a third one. The Comoros, yeah, Comoros. These three island destinations, Helmut, are, you can only technically access them if you go as a, if you buy into these packages, these tourist packages. You can only access them in that scenario. Why do I say that? It's because in most cases, those tour packages, those tour companies already have like exemptions from the governments of those island nations in terms of, okay, fine, you're bringing these people, what, from which countries are they from? And then you organize your visa and stuff like that. And you know, it gets ease of access.
So they're doing
backpacking from Windhoek to Seychelles. It'll be a nightmare for you, which also shows some barriers in the tourism scene.
Yeah.
But for the Namibian to understand, why are we looking at a policy guidance mechanism, a tool, a document that comes through from the UN World Trade Organization, UN World Tourism Organization, is primarily that it speaks about a holistic picture, guys. So it speaks about have policies in place that helps the tourism sector. Have policies in place that helps people who operate in the tourism sector, who are leveraging or are using natural resources in order for the tourism sector to continue to thrive. Because one of the downsides, that some people, and this is even something that's come up in the National Assembly, Hamoud. I won't mention names specifically of the minister who is advocating for this particular thing.
What's that?
The revival of Air Namibia. But just...
Well, where they say will, they say way.
Okay, yeah, willing the thing into reality is a completely different task than actually having resources to play with to bring the thing back to reality. Because if we go look at the European examples of state-owned enterprises, of airlines, the only template that exists, Helmut, is Lufthansa from Germany. Lufthansa is so big, it even bought up, it even established smaller airlines.
Yeah.
That fly to us. Lufthansa doesn't fly anymore directly to us. It flies directly to us. These smaller subsidiaries of Lufthansa.
Mm.
Which should also tell Namibians it's a specific kind of tourist that comes to Namibia. Hamoud, I had friends that worked in Air Namibia. There are many Namibians that had friends that worked in Air Namibia. And many of those people that literally were the cabin crew attendants in Air Namibia would tell you stories of how an airplane goes empty from here, from Windhoek to Frankfurt.
Yeah,
but it's a plane that comes back full from Frankfurt to Windhoek.
So in other words, why?
Exactly. What's your favorite saying? Exactly. Why was this entity operating like that?
Okay, so I think it's safe to say it's going to be a number of things, from visa requirements to affordability, especially the affordability part.
I'll put it down to one plain simple thing.
What's that?
Marketing. They didn't have a presence. No one knew who they probably were in the market that they were advertising themselves or operating within. For example, Helmut.
Yeah.
If you are trying to service the German market for Namibia, you would have massive campaigns in millions of euros running in Germany. You won't be advertising here in Namibia, because I just gave you an example of stories I've heard. Airplanes that have 4 or 5 passengers on it, flying 10,000 kilometers to Frankfurt.
Yep.
Dude, They're already there. The alarm bells should have been ringing.
That this is not making business sense.
It's not making business sense. Now, if we look at a scenario like that, just to come and say, position a legal entity like another company, revive a company, to try and facilitate a specific sector, it's harder said than done, because the previous entity that existed before it was wound up, that process is not even yet done. Because, you know, just ever since 2021, is it 2021? Or is it 2020? Since 2020. Ever since 2020, when the airline was wound up by the government, they still haven't finalized much of those particular, the requirements that the, what are those guys' name? I almost said assessors. What is the two guys? The liquidators.
Yeah.
The two gentlemen. Their offices was not far here from us. I discovered. It's like literally here.
You know, I've come to learn that everyone that I make fun of lives in Kleinwindu.
Or works close to the studio.
Uh-huh. I did not know that until the whole, you know, Namco thing. And the guys were like, yeah, no, I own this property. Where? Kleinwindu? I was like, huh?
Oh, it's in Ludwigsdorf. just on the other side
The river. It's like, this is not healthy for my sanity. Yeah.
But the key thing here obviously speaks towards a scenario of, okay, so there potentially are like legal snags hanging still loose there from the previous entity.
Yeah.
But to just go and say, establish a company.
Let's just revive it,
out of the
in
world
the middle of dissolving it. Let's give it a mouth-to-mouth resuscitation.
Yeah, after we almost, cut off its knees in 5 years ago. I know it's a little bit of an excessive example, but in that setting.
Yeah, man.
Or cutting off its wings, That specific setting right there is one based upon, what are we doing? Then you could have just as well kept the thing alive.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go so that it pays off its own debts. Because that's what's the issue around Air Namibia of 2020. The issue was around servicing of its debts. Fast forward into this particular discussion. So we cited policy documents. We cited potential moves for something to happen because, the Works and Transport Minister, as well as also the...
Speaking of marketing.
Look there. But it's also what Rwanda did. It's also what South Africa is doing. Do you know that South Africa is running a... Visit South Africa campaign in Namibia? Do you know that, Hammer?
Huh?
Okay. Have you ever seen some of these billboards that don't have products on it, but it says like Team South Africa or Visit South Africa, something like that?
Yeah.
It's literally a tourism South Africa marketing exercise.
So we're not very good at marketing our country. Then, I mean, how did we find us? How did we find ourselves being used as a template of what the tourism sector should look like? Without, and we're still terrible at marketing.
Well, it's primarily what I see most of the times. The private sector, the tourism sector, participates in its own particular private sector, if I can call it, marketing functions and events.
Yeah.
There's one coming up, I know, at the end of this, not end of this month, either August or September, close to when the much of the expos and shows in the country are also busy running. There's one always that pops up, and many of us have heard of it. If you've worked in the tourism sector, you know which particular event I'm talking about. It always happens in Windhoek. If that thing kicks off, Helmut, you predominantly just see much of the private sector participating in that thing. If you go to, let's for example say it's now expo season in Namibia now.
Yeah.
You see the government, or the state owned, tourism companies and affiliated tourism activities at much of these particular expos, which are town councils and local authority expos and, industrial shows. And which has to tell you a picture of the private sector in Namibia, which is literally the discussion in the NDP thing that I spoke about. the one particular discussion of trust. The private sector does not trust
the public sector.
The public sector. If you take me to an expo, Helmut, let's say I'm okay. I won't use the word serious. I was going to say if I was a serious business person. But if you take me now, imagine I'm a foreign investor from wherever.
Yeah.
And now you tell me, Dwight, let's go to, I don't want to make fun of anyone. Okay. I'm going to select my usual punching bag, Ngurunguru. I go to Ngurunguru's expo, but I get to Ngurunguru and I've got a PA that can download documents from the NSA, and the PA goes, scrolls through the regional mapping exercise that the NSA did before the census.
Yeah.
They look at the census report and they look at the labor force report that came out.
Yeah.
And they go look at the population size of Ngurunguru. There's 10,000 people there. 8,000 of them have jobs, and all the 8,000 are employed in government. So who are the other private sector operators there? And then there's 111,000, Kavango West residents. No? Kavango, yeah, Kavango West residents who are living somewhere there in the rural communities. But I will call it bush, because if you go look at a map, you don't have like structured secondary roads that tell you I'm going from Dwight's, small, you know, cluster or homestead to Helmut's small cluster and homestead. And they're like signs that were invested in by Ministry of Works to say, this is Dwight's homestead of huts, and that's Helmut's homestead of huts, and this is the secondary road network of Namibia in Kavango West. Because now you've got to go look for where's the other 110,000 people.
Let's go with clarified.
Yeah.
They are nowhere near the, the urban area.
Clarified?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more like, discover yourselves?
Or
unveil yourselves.
First of all, we did not know, the rural to urban, ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was just pointed out that you have a very small fraction of people in that region that live in the urban area. And most of them are still scattered in the rural area.
Yeah.
So I think this brings us to the, the question of why. Why are a lot of people still scattered in rural, in rural areas? Why are they not having, feeling the need to move to the urban area? I think, when you look at it, that requires a whole, a transition that someone have to go through.
Yeah.
Because now you have to move from, take cooking, for example, from cooking with firewood to cooking with a electrical gas stove, for example. And then you have moved into an urban area. Now, this is where you have to pay for utilities like water, electricity bills. You have to pay for those things. When you look at all these expenses, you're just sitting there going like, if I can, I'm living free here and I don't have enough income for me to sustain that lifestyle.
Mm.
Why should I go there?
Mm.
So this is where we have, that brings us to the marketing example that you just pointed out. You're going to have to entice people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To spend money.
Exactly.
To come and buy your product and service every day. To invest back in it. Ad break.
Some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine. Pop. But no flakes. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends. But no Tassenberg.
Now that's just not right.
Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere urikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito da njuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda do inawa nune udo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendi finawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali hea bi nola natu hea li bali no hea ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. The time is 16 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we're here until the hour of 6. Go.
So,
it's about enticing.
If you look at the enticing mechanism that obviously takes place,
yeah,
the enticement, Helmut, is all about who are you enticing to go where? Mm-hmm. For example, if I now use the airline reference. If I just stayed on the airline reference.
Look, that reference that you are using, dude, you are making us the whole country, you know, seem like Kurenkuru, where you have well.
But we are.
Yeah.
There's literally like probably 100 people that a month
travels.
That are Namibians.
Yeah.
That can fly, that can buy a ticket and fly regularly. There's like 100 people.
Again.
We are, Helmut.
Now,
that's not even the medical sector or the medicine sector or the
has nothing to do with marketing. I feel it's just something that has to do with affordability and travel issues or something.
Well, that's the next cascade.
Yeah.
Because if you wanted regular flights, you would have enticed, let's say your market was Germany, ne?
Yeah.
That you're trying to bring to Namibia. The German tourism market.
Yeah.
You would have marketed in Germany because they can afford the ticket. And then you tell them buy your return ticket through us to fly you back. Mm-hmm. Don't buy it at Lufthansa. Fly here and fly back with Lufthansa.
Huh.
Do you get it? Because Lufthansa is marketing to them.
Yeah.
To its home market. Hey guys, we've got these wonderful new routes that we're bringing to you in Africa, in Southern Africa. They're stable, they're peaceful, they're not like certain parts of other Africans where you know, you don't even know if the lights will be on when you land. So, here's the situation. Here are the tickets. Here are the packages. Go access them. You see, marketing projects and marketing campaigns running every day, every minute of the time frame on any media platform out there. And that tourist is convinced to buy a ticket with Lufthansa.
Okay, now the question is, how do you get? Take for example, you know, let's just cross our fingers and toes and teeth, if possible, and hope that Air Namibia is revived. And now you have to, you are obviously going to have an airline that's going to have multiple destination points.
Yeah.
How do you get Namibians to travel to this destination point so that you don't fly out of the country with an empty plane every now and then?
Well, here's the thing. They must have disposable income.
And we are back to the food security discussion.
Exactly. Disposable income. So even though tourism works to Namibia's benefit, every Namibian on every tier or category or rank, tourism works to our benefit because the thing is here. The person still has to fly to us and it's here.
Yeah.
Now, remember when you and I did the tourism sector through hospitality review in last month or at the start of this month? I think it was the start of this month or last month. When we did that particular talk, where we looked at that report that showed which are the most visitors internationally and then regionally.
Yeah.
Namibia has a lot of Angolans and South Africans that comes to it.
Mm-hmm.
How do they come to us, Helmut? These Angolans and South Africans drive to us.
Yep.
Now, instead of
subsidized diesel, they're not going to travel anymore.
Leave that story. Because I asked a question of a guy that I used to study with, an Angolan guy that was with me on university. And I asked him, who are these Angolan tourists that come here? He says, Dwight, those are usually people in well-off scenarios. They are the private sector teachers. They're not the government teachers. They are either the children of, well-off people in the Angolan societies.
Yeah.
I mean, there's another girl, not to mention names, not that many Namibians might know her, but someone might know her. She went for a cousin's wedding in Angola.
Yeah.
Now, it's not very often that you see many Namibians posting, you know, that they are going for their cousin's wedding on the other side of the border.
Yeah.
Now, if that activity can be spurred on, or what you call it, what do they call that thing, can be encouraged so that, you know, more people can cross over. You obviously promote safety aspects, safety standards, friendly societies, clean urban settings with functioning infrastructure. Then, yes, people will go to you. But if you get to a setting where the price is too high just to get onto the plane, and you're like, bruh, what am I going to live off on the other side when I land there? Then obviously you will have a major concern.
Yep.
Now, the reason why air travel is a very it's a luxury item in the middle class brackets or demographics of any country. Air travel, it's a luxury item. If the country does not border onto you, Helmut, you might be forced to only buy a ticket. But you buy that ticket because you have probably saved up for the ticket. Or you have probably, you know, you've planned for this holiday. Many Namibians can attest to how they used to drive everywhere. Which should tell you something. Now, does that mean that cars are affordable in Namibia? Not really. Does it mean that the petrol has become affordable?
Ha, yeah, right.
Not really. But the discussion also hinges on that certain other input factors are barriers, massive barriers, or they are massive enablers. If I told you, Helmut, a road trip from Windhoek to Cape Town is a way better road trip than let's say between Johannesburg and Pretoria, or let's say from Pretoria to Bloemfontein in South Africa, or even from Windhoek to Swakopmund. If I told you the road trip from here to there is way better than the road trip from Windhoek to Swakop, you'd go like, wow, Dwight, did you really drive both? Then I could say, yes, I did drive both.
Yeah.
But many people, okay, in Europe, they don't do this. They get on a train or they hop on a plane. Here, we already have a functioning thing. Traveling by road, which is either, traveling by land, which is either road or rail. Now, set the scene in terms of what this policy guidance document of the UN Tourism Organization tries to say. They say, position all stakeholders, which also include investors. Now, this is where I actually want to omit something, because it probably would be me speaking against government trying to bring in another SOE, but you already have existing functionaries. You see, Hamoud, it's like you in the agricultural sector. Let's say, for example, there are two maize producers, but the one is a privately owned farm that produces maize per ton, sells it to its value chain participants, and everyone shares the money as the product moves up and down the line. And then you've got a state-owned maize farm, but the state-owned maize farm has to be that the state now has to go and employ or establish an agency that has to buy the maize from the state farm. And then that agency has to try and sell the maize of that state farm to somewhere in the economy. The first particular thing is that anyone would ask you in the other aspect of liberal economics. That's why I always differentiate which economics sphere it is. If someone asks you in liberal economics scenario, let it be a open market. What do you call it? Free market.
Yeah, free market economy.
You know, allow people to invent, create and innovate. But then every time you see aspects where, in some cases, the state tries to become a presence, which gets back to your NAMCOR reference that you always like to use, being regulator and player at the same time, being referee and player at the same time in the same game. Which you also have to ask a question in terms of, okay, now you could have just invested in the State Farm to add something into the food security discussion or to help with something else. But to add an agency, these are now more government employees.
It's extra cost.
It's extra cost. And now you, that agency now has to try and understand how the private sector functions, because the private sector knows, Hamoud, if I grow the maize, you are the distributor, I sell it to you. I don't care what you do with the maize.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care, because I sold it to you. I have my money in my bank. It's up to you to take that maize and go and sell it to someone
that uses it that in uses food processing, for example.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, I just explained that in some cases, the value chain already exists. So now in many cases, we see our poor government try to reinvent the wheel every time. Not poor as in impoverished, but poor as in, you know, they try to now play. It's like a child now learning soccer after knowing soccer for the whole of his life. But now he has to learn soccer. It's like a software update for no reason. So it's these particular functionaries. Helmut, bring in an airline. A government-owned airline will not help Namibia. It'll actually put a bigger strain on the
taxpayers' money.
Well, okay.
Subsidize every now and then.
Okay, let's take out the word taxpayers' money. Let me rather say it put a strain on the budgetary functions.
That's a lot of technicalities. Let's go with taxpayers' money. No.
Which you are right. You know, he is right, guys. Because it does come from us, the taxpayer. You know, in all fairness.
Personally, I don't think I have a problem with bringing it back. As long as we have figured out what caused the malfunctioning that may led us, make a decision to liquidate it back then.
Yeah.
Those problems. Have we taken care of them to ensure that they don't pop up again and cause the same problem and most likely lead to the same, to the same end again of having to, liquidate it?
Mm.
Yeah. Because, if we have looked at what was going wrong back then and just back to the drawing board, why did it fail the first time?
Mm.
Yeah. This and this, and then you basically put down a list of why it failed the first time. Do you have solutions in place to make sure that it doesn't occur again if you bring it back? And, who are you serving? Who's your market?
Yeah.
We're back to the Peugeot example again.
We are back to Peugeot.
Who are you serving?
We're even back to SME Bank.
That's
also contained in that book.
Who are you serving?
Yeah.
And how's that market looking like?
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I think Peugeot is perhaps one of the worst economic decisions we've ever made is, and I didn't see that until you pointed it out. We went to an international, we went to a different country and then negotiated for them to give us their product was more of a franchise that we're running there, so that we can serve a market that was already being served by our neighbor and a member of SACO. And a member of SADC and a member of AU. I'm telling you, the backstabbing days.
You know, it's one of those punches where someone is slightly, they start softer.
And yeah, then they keep going.
And they keep going, but it becomes harder every time. Just to emphasize the point. You were supposed to get this through your head.
Before continue, ad break.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat, spice, poikis ready. Even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
No way. Everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh,
you can't get it without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog. Tassimberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Ah, only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added...
Welcome back. It's 29 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we're here as usual until the hour of 6. So, where are we? You know, they start slow and the punch keep getting stronger and stronger. And,
no, we're not an MMA show, guys.
I know, but the irony is we keep making these mistakes to the point where it's beginning to look like more, it's more like it's not a mistake anymore. The poor planning in it all, which is what, and we have been through this.
Yeah.
Peugeot, you know, SME Bank, Tannery.
Yeah.
And, you know, a garment plan. I mean, there's a whole list. The question is, I don't live in a fantasy world, of thinking that everything that we must, that we plan must work 100% efficiently.
Mm.
But, it must at least work.
Or it should start functioning.
It should start functioning.
With its targeted goals.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that you just, inaugurate it and it's gathering dust shows that there was a lot, to some degree, poor planning going on there.
Yes. Look, it's easy, Helmut, to get a construction worker or a construction company to come and build you the site of the thing. Where the activity must take place.
Someone gets a tender, there's a whole transparency, there's no corruption going on, and then it's set up, and then
we, the media, we are invited to the unveiling of the facility, going like, yeah.
See, employment creation.
You know, it's going to do this. And we're like, but we don't see people. You should sometimes see us, the media, we all sometimes look like, what you call it, these lost sheep, man. You know, sheep that don't know if they must enter or you've seen what they do sometimes. They look inside. But it's just a fence and a gate.
Am I going in there?
There's a gate and a fence. You can see past the fence.
Yeah.
You can see that the gate is open. But they're like, what's going on here? Why is this gate open? You know, what's going on here? We don't see anything. And that's literally sometimes. How these particular aspects go down, Helmut, because I would love to say and hope, for example, like that tannery and that,
the garment factory
in the far north. Okay. The tannery was Mazani in Dangwa and the garment in Ngurunguru.
Yeah.
For Ngurunguru, it would have been the most ideal setting to start a TVET training program for the rural populations of Kavango West.
Yeah.
To have women and, you know, young girls and women to start learning sewing. To learn how to sew and how to, to start, being a tailor and a seamstress and all those other skill sets.
Yeah.
You know, working with the textile industry or being formally introduced through initiative at that facility. That facility starts playing sort of like an educational role. And then that facility at the same time then starts to double as a production unit, a formal production unit that has established production supply value chains itself.
Yeah.
Because Helmut, I walk, and I will use the South African business as an example. I walk into the South African retailers in the malls and they have got big posters in Windhoek that say proudly South African. With a South African lady smiling there in her traditional garment, you know, you'll see it in all the South African clothing retailers.
Yeah.
You'll see that poster.
I've attended several, several fashion shows, most of which I was dragged to. Don't ask.
Did you say you were pulled there or there was a substance thrown in your drink and you were dragged?
Dragged. Not dragged like it's in nicotine. And the tar. That would be not dragging.
My mind was somewhere else. I'm sorry. Yeah. My mind was somewhere else. Sorry, man. Sorry.
You need prayers, dude. Now, the thing is, you can basically, one thing I like about those shows is that, you get to see just how creative people are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to, when it comes to making garments. And we have, tailoring institutions that offer those skills. I feel like they should be working in connection with institutions like that.
Mm.
So that everything that's produced here, designed here,
mm.
where do you look at for mass production mm. of that particular garment? That's where you take it. You just take the schematics or whatever they call it, and then you say, okay, we need this amount of this
mm.
and stuff. But it's kind of difficult to basically wrap my mind around the fact that we went into setting up a piece of infrastructure that after inauguration it's just gathering dust. Nothing.
Exactly.
Just yes. Well, the thing is, we are very good at we're very good at talking. Mm-hmm. Once we set this thing up, is going to create employment and all that. But we don't consider whether or not what are we going to produce? Garments, excellent. That question is answered. Who is going to produce? What type of garment? Mm. Who is the target market? Are we going to produce, different school uniforms for a lot of different schools in Namibia? Are we going to produce a lot of, military outfits, for example?
Yeah.
And things like, the reason why the military, things that is associated with the military is going to have a lot of strict requirements is because you are talking about a situation of life and death here. Yeah. So you don't have, a mistake can mean literally the difference between life and death.
Mm.
So you have to meet strict requirements over what material to use. You can't just lump on anything. So, the fact that we have institutions that we spend the planning of it all was a brilliant idea for me. The setup and the fact that we basically pulled it through and basically inaugurated the whole thing. But the fact that now we're done. Mm. And if you look at it, we seem to have created a very terrible precedence when it comes to this, because how often have we talked about green scheme and then we hype it up? And then just in, next 2-3 years, you find out that that green scheme have, turned a brown scheme the moment the minister who inaugurated it left.
Not just that, Hamad. For example, earlier today, I saw one of our colleagues debating on the status of a green scheme. Also by going like, there's one actor on the thing saying, no, we are producing and we've delivered such a yield of this much in terms of the specific crop. And then there's a bunch of smaller other actors also on the same particular scheme, on the same particular project, sort of like giving a counter voice, disputing the actual figures or, the whatever happens there. And I realized this usually happens in and around, public initiatives. Initiatives started by the government.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have one guy saying, no, we delivered such a yield. And then you've got four other guys saying, no, that guy's lying. I've never seen such, I don't know if I should call it clownery, but it really is on levels of being a circus. I've never seen such things, Hamad. There's nothing wrong with having a facility standing not functioning,
mm-hmm.
right? But if a facility is standing still, like you and I highlighted, and we're still on the tourism side of things, in this governance dimension of the sustainable investment or sustainable aspect of running your tourism sector.
Yeah.
One of the principles that they've got in the governance, pillar is something known as, dynamic policymaking and the right to regulate. Now, dynamic policymaking, Hamad, there was another scenario, I'll lump in another example of a guy that was interviewed living in China as a business person, but he was interviewed by this, it's either a Russian guy or another guy on YouTube. And he asked the guy, you know, how, you know, what is life like doing business in a country like China? And he says, the first thing that you should never do is participate in the politics of the country, because you accept the fact that it's a mono political system.
Yeah.
You know, it's one.
Yeah, one political
party. One political party, yeah. One entity that does all political thinking or policy making. But he says, if the policymakers see that the thing doesn't work in the economy,
they're going to change it.
They change the policy. In Namibia, even if you've looked since the various particular anti-corruption initiatives that have taken place and kicked off, yes. People are lumping everything, even if things were there before that public actor or stakeholder is now appearing for this particular charge. Everything is now blamed on this guy. Everything that went supposedly wrong. But everywhere else, Helmut,
yeah,
in the world, they say, okay, you saw that the thing didn't work.
What was right? What was right? Wrong? So yeah. Let's correct the wrong and then give you credit for what was right, and we're moving on
and
from this.
And you move on.
Yeah.
Because the same public commentators that you will see, for example, on the social medias of the recent NAMCOR, you know, court case
bail
discussion,
application, yeah.
Bail application discussions, all those comments below the videos or below the streams.
Yeah.
And I know you read them, Helmut.
Oh,
I also read
in
them.
In excruciating detail.
A lot of the people, unfortunately, are sort of like that. They are trying to reincarnate a French Revolution scenario with Marie Antoinette. The thing is, the downside is, in policy making, people are allowed to make mistakes because sometimes a mistake will happen.
Yeah.
It's just a question of severity of the mistake. There is nothing that is foolproof, that is bulletproof, that's even water or even airproof in this world.
You see, now, the point you just made there is the reason why I'm not, personally, I don't subscribe to the idea of fire everyone and replace them. My question is, the next bunch exactly
has to come and discover, you know, where are the light switches in the place, in the office.
Not just that. If the reason why you are going to fire everyone and replace each and every single one of them is because there was a mistake, maybe one or two of them made a mistake here and there.
Yeah.
The question is, where are you going to get a bunch of people that will never screw up?
Exactly.
For me, it all comes down to regulation.
Exactly.
You are going to have to regulate each and everything that's done, because you are not going to find people that will never screw up.
There is no such thing. Helmut,
that explains why we have a bunch of single people, because we keep looking for, you know, for people that are perfect. The point is, you can go to our parliament right now,
yeah,
and get rid of everyone, yeah, and replace them with people that you think are not going to screw up.
Yeah.
2-3 months down the line, you'll realize you'll be back to square one.
Yeah.
You'll be firing the whole cabinet every now and then.
Yeah.
You are not going to be able to run a country with mentality like that.
And that's even if that's even assuming that the labor law won't come after you.
Exactly.
Because, people have different understandings or different scenarios in terms of, for example, how the labor law can work. In many cases, the only places where you can summarily fire someone is literally if they stole something, meaning theft, they did a very serious act, which is usually ones like
gross misconduct,
yeah, which could be drunk or one or other particular aspects like nudity. Nudity is involved. I'm not going to say it on air.
Sexual harassment somewhere in there.
I was trying to hide this. Yeah, sexual harassment as well. And the other severe element is the thing of what's that thing's name, Helmut? Fighting, violence.
Oh, yeah.
Violence and theft are sort of like the immediate ones. The others that you and I just mentioned, they have gray areas in them.
It's not that I'm against you, you know, the decision of getting rid of everyone and replacing them with someone new. My question is, the people that you are going to, the new guys that you are going to bring in, are you 100% certain that they are not going to screw up?
Or because, that they're going to make mistakes.
Exactly. Yeah. Because what you are doing is you are setting, you are setting precedents that what happens is as soon as one of you screw up, we get rid of everyone. And in that very, in that new group that we are bringing up, one of them is going to screw up. What do you do?
Well, as usual. Also going to replace the same squad.
So let's just replace, let's get rid of everyone and replace them again. 5 years down the line, you'll realize that, you are out of people to replace. So you will have to recycle.
Not even 5 years. In year two.
Then you're like, okay, where do we get them?
And then you have to start back with the same squad that you first fired. And now they will carry grudges against you because you humiliated them firstly. Yeah. So then we'll go like, no, why must we work for you? But anyway.
Yeah, so it all comes down, for me, it all comes down to the regulations in place.
Yeah.
Like a regular checks and balance of what this person is doing. Now, and one of the reasons why I think that's, why I think that way is because of the, of the courtroom door example. The refurbished, temporary court structures that they were supposed to set up?
Prefabricated.
Prefabricated courtrooms.
This
was from 2015.
But remember, it was supposedly in sites that don't concur with the constituency layout of Namibia. Because the previous,
Standing committee.
Yeah, the previous standing committee of constitution and legal affairs, they kept asking the two executive directors of judiciary.
About why, there's this other constituency that they were looking at.
Where is Karatura? Is it Karatura East they were looking for?
I remember that it's Karatura East, Karatura West, there was someone because they were like, we don't see it, and I think on some blueprint of stuff.
Or any, there wasn't even a street designation, but supposedly there was supposed to be a temporary court.
When was this, discussion held? Wasn't that last year?
Yeah, last year.
They made reference to a budget allocation that was made to this,
in 2015.
Yeah. That's why I keep going back to the regulation again. If you are going to, if you are going to thrust someone with millions of dollars and only check up on them 5 years after that.
No, seven, almost 9 years later.
Almost 9 years later.
Yeah.
By the time that you come there, even, you come asking questions, the person that that company have changed the leadership like 1,000 times.
Yeah. They even began selling something else. Even.
Yeah, yeah. You'll be asking them, okay, we gave you a tender to build this structure. What happened there? Like, we stopped doing that business a long time ago.
Why are you now selling, machine tools and tool kits?
No, we changed into a restaurant a long time ago. What are you going to do? Like, the regulation, like, getting rid of everyone, you can try, but, good luck finding people that don't make mistakes.
Now, if we still stay in the governance side of things, there's another particular one which is actually number one of them all. Policy coherence and internal organization.
Oh, dear.
Now, the reason why I'm focusing on that for now, like in our last 10 minutes as well, we've already done those reports, those indications that indicated how we do have ministries, which is obviously pre-2025 or pre-21 March 2025. Much of the reports and analyses is based upon how we have this fragmentation that exists within the public sector.
Working in silos, in the words of the Office of the...
Of the Auditor General.
The Auditor General.
Yeah. However, if you look for fragmentation in the private sector, the private sector's fragmentation is based upon competition. So the private sector has the right to be fragmented.
Because they are competing against each other?
Exactly.
Oh.
They are competing with each other. So the private sector has the right to be fragmented. Because it's every man or woman for themselves.
Law of the jungle.
They are literally living by law. It's even the same particular thing here in terms of if you look at the landscape between privately owned radio stations and government owned radio stations.
Yeah.
Helmut, I have done this exercise a lot. I would sometimes listen to the various radio stations to see, what's the similarity in product for the listener.
Yeah.
And every time I come down to the same conclusion, We as Eagle FM, we are literally there on an island, some there by ourselves. There.
And come to stuff we talk about or what?
Content. The way we present the particular content.
Yeah, I think I've seen the inputs
into that. But it's not even that. You can do the exercise yourself. You don't need a report to explain it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You can just go and sit and listen to what, let's say your friends or family members have access to. And then you would realize, so we are there, literally. We are. It's not that we are leading.
We're in isolation.
Yeah, but we are in isolation for a purpose.
Yeah.
We designated a market segment for us. Everyone else in the country is saying, we play music during the day. We have a five minute something that comma is a show. And then it's music from there. Hence the reason when you and I did that discussion last year about the, you know, how is it possible that an MP in National Assembly wants to come and dictate what content you
type of music you play.
As a media company, what content you must carry. Which technically goes against the basis of, you know, you are a business person and you're trying to generate an entity that feeds a specific economic need.
Yeah.
Because literally it comes and says that regulation is now overstepping its bounds by saying, hey, listen, you must now do what the other guys are doing. But if what you're doing is not wrong, why must you conform to what the other guys are doing? Do you understand?
Yeah.
Now, there is one such other scenario that exists in the private sector. This is found in the US MLS, the football league, the soccer league in the US. The one that many people would know of, the MLS. Helmut, there are only two kit brands allowed in that league.
Huh?
Yeah. Yeah, when I found that out, there are only two kit brands allowed in that league. Those two kit brands dictate that the player that plays at that football club wears either or. So, what are the two?
Just one of the two.
One of the two. For boots, even your football boots.
Yeah.
So if you are playing at a football franchise in the US, let's say it's the Seattle Whitecaps, in the city of Seattle. Seattle Sounders, sorry. Your team is sponsored by Adidas. They make the kit.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either just wear Adidas football boots or Nike football boots. You can't wear Reebok, you can't wear Puma, you can't wear Umbro, you can't wear Under Armour, you can't wear New Balance. You are just locked in onto those two brands. That's all. No other commercial clothing maker, kit maker, can enter that market because those two companies literally went and tied down the authority that is in charge of the league to just have those two things in. Now that anyone would say is clear monopolization of a market. That's clearly a monopoly.
Yeah.
Now, in a Namibian context, it's not healthy to have monopolies. It's really not healthy to have a monopoly. Because a monopoly would mean this is the only guy in the space operating there. This is the only guy that's allowed to provide a service and they can do whatever they want with that service. And you can look to the telecoms sector in Namibia. Two government-run institutions and one private sector owned. The other private sector guys are way too small because, you know, they are obviously building up themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So the fragmentation in terms of market share in the private sector is clearly based upon competitive advantage. But when you come to a state-run situation, there is this mix and matching, this non-conformity to the same policy. For example, MICT has an internet policy or internet access or universal internet access policy, that thing of 2012 that you and I looked at last year. The one where they were trying to say make internet as widely accessible as possible across the country.
Well,
That was 2012. That policy document is dated 2012. We are in 2025. That's not possible.
I was in high school. And there's no way that makes sense.
That, no, it won't. Because if you look at policy non-coherence in the public sector, you see literally that the same goal is not met. But two private companies that are direct competitors with each other, they don't have to agree with each other's corporate strategies. Because yours could be, I'm going to sell sneakers. And mine could be, I'm going to sell hats. And for government to come and tell me, hey, listen, you both of you must start making shirts. But our factories are designed and laid out for specifically what we are making.
Yeah.
So what's the next thing that'll happen? We'll tell the government, okay, so then invest in us to buy that, that machinery. You,
and so we can so change we can, from what we have to.
Yeah. And then we end up also in the magistrate's court because we told the government, give us money to do what you want us to do. It's basics. And that's how expansion happens and diversification comes about. Yeah. I know this was a PhD lesson on market segmentation and
okay,
marketing strategy. if any student is listening right now, you got it for free.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Okay. What's the reference going to be? Eagle FM. Thank you.
We're going to send you that invoice. Don't you dare identify yourself.
Yeah. Okay. We have 3 minutes before we call it, we have 3 minutes before we call it a day. Just, you know, okay, you have, you went through, principle one, policy coherence and internal organization and, man, time is just flying. There's a stakeholder collaboration and a rule of law.
Yeah.
The collaboration now, the moment I saw that, I was like, you know what, there's no a public-private engagement. I was like, okay, you know what, I'm done reading that. The reason is, I came back to information gathering.
Yeah, and data collection.
Which is why I, data collection. Which is why I keep singing, you know, which is why I kept, you know, earlier on singing about the regulations.
Yeah.
Because to make some of these decisions, information is needed. Again, you know, if you look at, you know, Deloitte's baseline survey on the, you know, on the infrastructure of the oil sector that we are busy establishing, I really, really, really like how the blueprint was laid out in a way that,
any person
can understand, even someone that, you know, that doesn't, that is not familiar with the petroleum industry.
Mm.
And that's, this is how it goes. You know, Phase one is a series of activities that's going to take from this year to approximately this year.
Mm.
And this was the seismic survey to basically look at what type of crude oil do we have? Does it have any commercial viability?
Mm.
What type of machines do we need to extract it? And, what type of skills is needed? And what type of infrastructure do we have to set up? Now, for a very long time, a lot of people, especially Americans, kept asking why do the Americans buy a lot of oil and then ship a lot of crude oil away, away for refining.
Mm.
That has to do with the infrastructure setup. Not all the oil in the oil refinery can refine all different types of crude oils.
Mm.
No, unfortunately, no.
No, but Hamoud, do you know how critical is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Because many people sit and think that oil found in Namibia's oil basins is similar to oil found in Angola's oil basin.
No.
And similar to the oil found in Gabon or in the other
places. It's basically the same like water that you find underground. It's going to have different chemical contents.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original or Vintook Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting. To moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, 6 o'clock on the dot. Was I, crude oil, you know, drilled in different parts of the world are going to have different chemical makeup. Therefore, requiring specific, you know, specific infrastructure to refine it. You can't just drill anything and then just throw it in any refinery. Every refinery is designed to, is designed with a specific type of crude oil in mind.
Yeah.
So, that again speaks into, that also speaks into infrastructure. So that means information gathering, especially, data collection is one of those reasons why the public and private sector, especially in Namibia, are going to have, it's going to take a while for them to sink in terms of their collabo. Mm. Because, for the most part of the private sector, they want, the most recent information. And if you, one thing that we have looked, which can easily be identified from the reports that we have seen is that, it takes the public sector, especially, especially in Namibia, a while to gather all the information all at one place. By the time that the information comes, comes out, a lot of the things, have changed. But, most of the recent reports that we have gone through, especially those ones are coming out of the, the Auditor General's office, those ones I'm like, okay, now this is fairly recent. The one that was, the one that I just honestly found disappointing is the one that gave us a reference to 2015. Like, really?
They're now Auditor General's reports. There's one specific one that came out last week, just before they went on recess. Not last week, the week before.
Mm-hmm.
About the Kavango West or the Kavango East Regional Council for the financial year 2018 to 2019. I was like, what?
Okay, so now at this point, I'm not saying the information is useless, which is what it sounds like. The question is, how important is that information now?
Yeah, it just comes too late. And no oversight committee, no oversight authority, for example, can possibly try to intervene if something goes wrong.
Yeah. And looking at the life expectancy, 2018, I mean, we had COVID-19. Who was this guy who was running this company when it was set up? Well, he died during COVID-19 pandemic. Nice.
And we can't get answers from him.
Yeah, unfortunately, dead men tell no tales, yeah. Literally. Yeah, so.
Literally.
Yeah, so it's a, I think, a public, private partnership, if there's one thing that we have seen is that there are a lot of countries that basically, indicate just how significant that type, just how much work they can get done together.
Mm.
But information gathering is just as important. And then that, every time that I look in the, every time that I look in the public sector and you bring up the information, data collection, I go like, not that again. Look, everyone from executive office to different ministries, regional, local authorities, one thing that keeps coming out annual is that financial reporting.
Yeah.
We are terrible at that. Just straight out, straight down to political parties. That's one thing that was made clear last. It's one of the reasons why some political parties had to be deregistered last year.
And threatened with deregistration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then those ones that submitted their financial statement had basically had to scramble because the due date was closing. Have you seen a bunch of university students with, when the deadline of an assignment is about to close down? That was basically every political party in our country last year.
Mm.
So when you look at it like that, you see that, we have a lot of things on paper that, how we should do it.
Yeah.
But we don't. That's why, because, the regulation is just going, well, you know what? I know I have given you like 1,000 warnings, but I'm going to give you this 1,001 more. Yeah. Welcome to the land of the brave.
Yeah. Welcome to the land of the brave.
Yeah. So, 4 minutes into the hour of six. So I'm done.
Just on that last particular note that you mentioned now.
Yeah.
The last two pillars in this particular a report of the UN Tourism Organization. Namibia doesn't have to do much with environmental dimension, nor does Namibia have to do much with the socio-cultural dimension.
Mm.
Because these two guys build onto the first two dimensions of the economic one and the governance one. Now, I have seen, and there are templates where an economic ecosystem can function without the existence of a government. Well, we're technically still seeing it in Gaza. Hamas's guys, they confiscate the aid,
mm-hmm.
and then they sell it to the hungry population.
That's diabolical.
That is diabolical. And I'm like, yeah, my worldview has changed in the past 6 months about that organization. But yeah. So it's the same thing that happened in Somalia. The warlords would confiscate the food aid trucks from the UN and sell it to the hungry population. So, like I said, an ecosystem can exist without...
Wars are expensive,
right? Yeah, they are.
So unless you have money, don't start one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they can exist outside of it. However, if you're going to have the template for a governance system to exist, explore, be able to be transparent, you know, gather data, publish data, say this is what did not work, come back and you know, change course of policies.
Yeah.
Because then the economic side of things will just, they will just continuously fall in line when a new policy is amended or comes along. And so it'll just continue because all they want to know is, how does what you're going to bring in the governance sector going to provide the trust element for the overall sectoral performance of, let's, for example, say the tourism sector? If you're going to show up with an Air Namibia and it's going to be a dud again.
We're back to square one.
We're back to square one. It's going to be a dud again. So yeah, it's a key function. It's a key discussion.
Yeah. One in which we are doing fairly well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's hence the reason why I literally
said, in Namibia, just the tourism. Had to clarify that part. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. But in most cases, the last two pillars
of
this particular report from the UNWTO, Namibia doesn't have to do anything in the socio and in the sociocultural and in the environmental thing.
Yeah.
We look after that. We preserve it. We even communicate it through education programs and policies. The first two is that the economic sphere can go like, you know what? If we're private sector, we do what we do that brings us money.
Annotations to principles under governance and dimension.
Mm.
That's a principle number six. Just on what page is that? Principle number six. That's on page 20.
Yeah.
Data collection and monitoring. Exactly. What you need is monitor things in real time. Not come back and try to figure out what happened 7 years down the line.
Exactly. Looking for prefabricated courtrooms that did not materialize in supposed, I don't want to say fake, but not aligned designations of geography that doesn't make sense on any map.
Someone will soon get a tender to build a prefabricated courtroom on the moon. But,
on that note, guys. Stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company. It's a Wednesday evening, and we'll see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
It's a Wednesday. Tomorrow is Thursday. Oh, and month end. Yippee!
Okay, I.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.